All right, you ready to go to war?
Ready.
It's coming in loud.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicka brown, chicken brown cow. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wisco Weekly. This is a year-end episode where I'm catching up with a good friend of mine, transportation expert. He's been on the show before. We have lots of things that we agree on. Not so many things. I wouldn't even say we disagree on anything. We have different viewpoints, but we all are looking towards the same direction. And part of where my interest lies and where his interest lies, and then where we both join together, is I like to focus a lot on the future of automotive. He likes to focus a lot on the future of transportation. So this is where hopefully our dialogue continues to spark these discussions, these debates, and hopefully actions of how to merge these two segments. So without further ado, a previous guest on the show, a very good friend of mine, transportation expert, please welcome Mr. Rudy Salo.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wisco. I have one question for you before we start.
Talk to me, baby.
The last time I did my bonus episode with you, and I know you said not to bring up the last time, but I got some chicken brown cow stuff. Is that a thing with me? Do I give off a chicken brown type of a sense here?
Yes.
Okay, that's a great answer. I don't know what that means. I'm gonna have to talk to a psychologist about that, but thank you for answering that question.
So, you know, the part, that introduction is the punchline to an inappropriate joke.
Okay. You see, I'm so not inappropriate. I'm 100% appropriate. So we're completely on two different wavelengths.
All right. So for this episode, Rudy, I want to get into kind of a year-end review. You obviously get to speak at many different events. And so I want to talk about some of the highlights of this past year through your eyes. And so let's start it. What would be one of the first things about this past year that was a highlight about, you know, where the future of transportation is going?
I appreciate that. And yes, I did speak at a lot of conferences this year. And I spoke on your podcast, and that was a wonderful. And as a part of speaking on your podcast and preparing my message, I did have an epiphany. And now I bring this epiphany up as a part of like my gospel. And it's the gospel of transformation of transportation and infrastructure and driverless cars and micromobility and everything. Here's what it is.
Okay.
A driverless car that is not connected to its infrastructure, that's not connected to any other drivers, that's not connected to the grid, that's not connected to anything, is simply a car without a driver. It's simply basically a computer driving around, right? Why is that profound? Because it hit me that the most important thing, the only way we're ever gonna get to the future that everybody keeps talking about in the driverless car world, right? Everyone's talking about it now, like, oh, real estate's gonna change. Oh, the way we live is gonna change. Oh, the way we're gonna work is gonna change. Not true, unless that car is a connected car. So it's driverless and connected vehicles that can transform the way that we live. And that connectivity to other vehicles, to infrastructure, to the grid, to sidewalks, to curbs. That was the most important thing that I learned this year that I've been kind of saying to everybody. I've been renaming panels that I used to be on panels that were just called driverless cars. And then once I had this epiphany, I said, no. We're talking about driverless and connected vehicles. The word connected is my epiphany of the year. That word is so important, and it's got a lot of meaning to it. It's not just about vehicles. Being connected also brings up the fact of who where we are in society. We pay for all the infrastructure that's out there. We pay for every road. We pay for every traffic signal. We pay for everything through our taxes, through everything that you know, we provide to the government, and the government finances everything. And gas taxes and sales tax, whatever, however you want to slice and dice local revenues, we pay for everything. We're connected to everything. And if we want to truly transform the way that we live, the way that we commute, the way that we are moving around, the way that we're living, we need to feel connected to it. We need to pay for it in different ways. We need to be paying more to if we want to transform our society. And so the most important thing that I've learned this year is the importance of the word connected. It's got so many layers to it. It's such a beautiful word.
And so speak on this some more. What were some of the, when did this epiphany come about?
It was actually right after, I would say it was right after we had our podcast.
Mm.
I was preparing to speak at one of the panels that I spoke on this year. It was Silicon Dragon.
Silicon Dragon.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I'll tell you why it's cool.
It's racist. It's racist, Rudy.
It's not racist, but it is Eastern focused, because Silicon Dragon is a conference that's held in Pasadena. It's very China, US based focused business. But in the past,
couldn't tell from the name.
I know. Wow. It's true. In the past, they've primarily focused on Hollywood and China's role in Hollywood. They did something amazing this year. They had a transit panel where they had a number of many fantastic newer startup type companies on the panel, and I was the moderator. They had somebody from eVelocity, they had somebody from Skytran, they had an electric airplane company, and they had a battery company. And I was doing heavy research into China and China's smart city initiatives and what's going on in China and comparing it to the United States. And I was looking at everything from like a funding level type thing. And then I kept seeing the word over and over and over again, connected vehicles versus autonomous vehicles, connected vehicle versus autonomous vehicles. I was like, okay, so wait a minute. These are two different things. Like, I thought all driverless cars already were connected to infrastructure, that all driverless cars were already had the sensors and everything that were connected to other cars. It's not true. It's not true. That's at like another level. Like the type of cars that you can go onto YouTube right now and see videos of are not necessarily connected. They don't have to be. They're just cars without a driver. That's when I had the epiphany. And then ever since then, any panel that I'm on, I specifically talk about the difference between a straight driverless car versus an autonomous and connected car. And I'm doubling down on the importance of connectivity, not just in between the cars and infrastructure, but how we as a society feel connected to our infrastructure. I'm trying to do something that's impossible. And if you want to know what that is, it's trying to make infrastructure warm, fuzzy, and sexy. Nobody in the world thinks infrastructure can be warm, fuzzy, and sexy and something to be interested in. But I'm trying to do that. Because if we can get interested in our infrastructure, maybe we'll start paying for it more. And then maybe we can transform our society.
Well, the whole infrastructure angle is a huge dilemma, right? Because on one hand, there does come the, you know, one of the questions you have to ask is, yes, who pays for it? The other question you would have to ask is, well, in order for a, you know, connected future, a driverless future to come about, how does the technology interact with the infrastructure? And these are almost like philosophical questions that, how do we get to ground level to say, hey, so this is how it's funded. This is how we start to implement sensors and radars using LiDARs from the car to interact with the road here. So is there an answer for that yet?
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. It is a philosophical question. We check this out. In November of in California, we almost repealed the gas tax. Maybe not almost. Almost is too strong of a word, right? The fact that we had to vote to repeal the gas tax increase in California is something that scares me. That means there's a segment of the population out there that does not want to pay 1 cent more to fix our roads, the 1 cent more to fix our infrastructure.
That's me.
Right. Did you vote no?
I voted no.
I
I implore you.
If only there was a video in here that people could see the only MMA fight I would ever do in my entire life. That's how passionate I feel about that.
Look, I voted no on it because... Pardon this interruption, but in order to stay intellectually honest and consistent, there needs to be a clarification. As Rudy and I were talking about the gas tax that was on this year's November ballot, the actual language of Proposition 6 was to repeal the gas tax. Therefore, while Rudy asked if I voted no, in fact, I voted yes to repeal it, and he voted no to keep it. Taking you back now into the conversation, I share why I was against the gas tax. I voted no on it because you're investing money in infrastructure that is the old way of doing things. Especially the things that we talk about, automotive and transportation. If it was like, hey, look, we are going to be fixing the infrastructure so that we are going to raise a lane from the highway so that we can dedicate that towards driverless cars, I'm in. But the gas tax, the registration, I couldn't support it because it's doing business as usual. And I'm trying to think differently. I'm trying to vote differently.
Had you not said what you said right now, you'd be a dead man. Because if there's one reason to have rejected it, it's because of that, and I agree with you. It is all about the same way we've been living, the same way we've built our entire country, which is focused on one thing and one thing only, personal use of vehicles for transportation. You're absolutely right, my friend. I do agree with you.
See, we may have different viewpoints, but the end goal is the same.
It's true. Okay. That is the only reason to eject it, but you shouldn't have rejected it because our roads are falling apart. And we need, listen to me. Don't shake your head. Listen, we need these roads to be maintained. We need them to be in a good fashion so we can transform them. We can't just let them go into disarray and then try to completely rip them out. See, we have roads. We need to take care of them.
This is where it's almost like, You need a shock to the system. You need the road to fall apart so that you know, so again, you don't do business as usual.
I appreciate what you're saying because I think you're saying it for a shocking purpose and just to kind of make people be like, wow, like that's pretty crazy to say. Here's the one thing that I must disagree with you on. We cannot shock our infrastructure. We all use it on a daily basis. If you shock infrastructure, our society will become a dystopian society overnight. We must maintain the existing infrastructure that we have. We must take care of it. We must treat it. We must water it like it's a plant and then make it better. We all use it. Our children use it. Our ambulances uses it. Our services use it. Everybody uses it. We must take care of it. Shocking it is not the right approach.
I'm gonna disagree with you on
this
one.
That's fine.
And my disagreement would be in talking about connectivity, and especially in society, how more people are remotely working from home and they're already connected to their computer, so whatever they can do from their office, they can essentially do from home. If indeed this connected car future, if and when it becomes a reality, then sure, of course you're going to need people that need the infrastructure, but they're going to be using it in an entirely different way, or not entirely different way, but they're going to be using it in a manner that is not one person behind a wheel. You know, you're going to have more shuttle systems, bus systems, and maybe you're not accommodating 30 people, but you're accommodating 4 people in a shuttle.
Even the person that stays at home and works at home is not using the road necessarily. If they're literally staying at home, aren't they getting food delivered to their house? Right. So somebody's using this is my whole point. We all use our infrastructure. We all have to take care of it. Even if you never left your house for 365 and you had people just deliver stuff to you, you are still using the infrastructure. You're getting stuff delivered
to you. You would have a downsizing in the infrastructure.
Well, it's my don't ever vote against a gas tax ever. If I ever hear you ever voting against an infrastructure bill ever again and not talking to me about it, I'm going to be very upset. And next time you bring me onto the show and then we argue this on the show before you vote. But I'm glad you brought this up. This is an important part of my message. Another thing that I learned this year, and this came about while I was speaking on another panel. I was at LA Locomotion, which is like the international premier mobility conference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's in its second year, it's incredible. And I spoke on the micromobility panel, and I had professionals there from Bird, from the head of Washington, D.C.'s transportation agency, from an excellent electric skateboard company called Boosted, from Bosch Bicycles and E-Bike. I spoke, and I talked about my connectivity spiel and infrastructure and everything. And a gentleman representing himself, he paid whatever, the $1,000 ticket to attend this conference so he can say what he wanted to say at this panel. He stood up, he was very eloquent, very calm, very collected, but he talked about the scooter problem that he is having in San Diego, and he was very upset. And he said, and I believed him. He said, I'm speaking on behalf of my older generation that is afraid to walk on our sidewalks right now. Okay, you didn't come to us. You didn't get any community buy-in. You just threw these things on the road, and now I'm scared to leave my house. You know, so I'm staying home. Was he exaggerating a little bit? Perhaps. The person from Bird completely agreed with him and said, look, these things are not meant to be on the sidewalk. We try to get people to not use the sidewalk. It's an issue we're working on. Excellent. Great response. But it's that kind of community engagement. It's about voting. It's about talking, right? That's another aspect of connectivity. And the fact that you voted against the gas tax bill because you felt that
you want to continue to bring that up.
No, I do because
you're trying to cope with it.
I'm trying to cope because I don't know if I want to talk to you ever again. But that's okay. The fact that you voted, but you probably felt that you the message of the importance of infrastructure, maintaining it, wasn't there. It wasn't presented to you. So that's my goal. My life goal is to talk about the importance of infrastructure to everybody, because if we could change the way we think about it, then we can, maybe we'd be more willing to pay for it, and maybe we'd be more willing to share it. You know, so it's not just sidewalks are only for walking. It's not just roads are only for cars. Maybe we can start transforming. Maybe we can really move forward to a collective use of the environment.
Shouldn't we be focusing then on, I mean, you know, part of the other shift that's happening in the automotive and transportation economy is the electrification of vehicles, right? In which everybody is always for. Well, if you start to have this widespread electrification of cars, they don't need gas money, or they don't need gas anymore, so you don't need a gas tax. Should not we start to have the, you know, early policies, the, and again, I hate to say start to regulate because we don't know exactly what's going on yet, but should we not start to have the beginnings of like, hey, look, all right, if you use 2 kilowatts, you know, per hour, then it's a 15% tax, like telecommunication companies.
You bring up an excellent point and something that I've been writing about for a number of years, which is if you own a purely electric vehicle, you're primarily not funding mm-hmm. infrastructure, because the number one way that we finance our roads and transportation networks in the United States is through the gas tax. Mm-hmm. Okay, we all pay gas tax at the federal level. It has not been indexed to inflation. It has not been raised since the 1990s. The actual use and value of it has dropped precipitously because as a society have become more clean, right? Because there's more electric vehicles and we have much more fuel efficiency. The actual amount of gas that's being the gas tax that's available is dropping. So think about that. We need more infrastructure. We need more maintenance, but it's dropping. So your point of, well, shouldn't electrical vehicles pay their fair share? Yes, they should. And so there's an alternative. There was a pilot program that was being used in Oregon, I think specifically in Portland, vehicles mile traveled. VMT, okay? Rather than paying per mile, per gallon, you're actually paying a fee for the amount of miles that are traveled. To me, that seems fairer, because an electric vehicle, it's still pretty heavy vehicle, right? It's damaging, because at the end of the day, what damages roads is weight, the weight of vehicles, right?
In combination with weather, but sure, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
But I mean, there's a whole other segment of of the transportation revolution called PRTs that are trying to not even use the road. I'm not going to even go down that, but the vast majority of transportation in this country still uses roads. An electric car damages the road almost as much as a regular combustible engine car. So, but they're not necessarily paying for it. Here in California, a lot of our transit and some transportation and some roads are paid for through our sales taxes through California, because those are called self-help counties. You know, the half-cent sales tax, it's the whole bond funding thing that'll bore the hell out of you. But we actually, all of us, whenever we buy something and we pay a sales tax, we're actually paying for transportation, which is great. That's in California. But we also have the gas tax. But in general, in the entire country, it's primarily funded through the gas tax. So these electric vehicles, they're not paying their fair share. I agree with you. We got to do something.
Well, so I want to almost pivot just a little bit. And again, to kind of talk about some of the different things that have been going on in 2018. So in addition to electric cars not paying their quote unquote fair share, you have companies like Tesla who are being subsidized. And in addition to their subsidy, they are starting to generate the mass, relatively speaking, the mass volume for, again, the electric car to be more widespread. So if you look at Tesla's production numbers, they're now going at 21,700, right? They had all those pre-orders for the Model 3. So now they're starting to ramp up production, and now they are starting to supersede other automakers in the business. One of them being Audi. Like, they are beating Audi's monthly numbers now. I think Audi over the last couple of months has done like 16,000, 17,000 respectively. Tesla, again, they're a little bit more steady and streamlined because they know how many cars they can produce. Tesla's doing 21,700. So you have a company like Tesla that gets subsidized by the government for people to buy an electric car. Tesla owners aren't paying the gas tax. My question then is, at what point do we start to not only just say, hey, electric car drivers, you're going to have to pay your fair share at some point, but how do we know electric cars will survive on its own? You know, meaning that take away the subsidy and all of a sudden it's like, okay, we know people want the electric car.
These are excellent, excellent questions. Philosophically, everything. These are the types of issues that we need to be talking about as a society. So I appreciate it. So an issue with electric vehicles is charging, right? Electric vehicle charging stations, are they as prolific as gas stations? Or are they easy to get to as gas stations? Are they able to access as gas stations, right? Some people say that the oil companies and industries are trying to limit the amount of electric charging vehicle stations that are out there, that are trying to put their foot, they're trying to stamp down the proliferation of electric vehicles, okay? There probably is a lot of evidence out there. I haven't seen any of it, you know, and I'm an attorney by day, so I usually like to see numbers. I usually like to see evidence before I say on that. But some people are saying what we need to do is to get the oil companies to stop having the power that they have and to let the electric vehicle charging stations proliferate, and then we will be able to actually have support of electric vehicles throughout the entire state and country. But the question was, at what point do we force the electric vehicles to pay their fair share? I think the answer to that question is as well, when they're on an even playing field with the oil companies.
Well, that'll be for a while.
Well, I know. But that's the issue, right?
All right. Let's get on to another topic here, or not topic, but what is something else that happened this year that was notable in your eyes?
Well, you touched upon it already. Tesla's success is great. Sorry.
It is great.
And I work with and I talk with a lot of electrical vehicle companies. And even though technically Tesla is their competition, they're rooting for them.
Oh, yeah.
They love it. They're like, yes, yes, validate us.
Exactly.
Validate us to our investors. Validate us to the public. Let everybody know that we want clean vehicles.
Well, I think to that end, right, you're starting to see at the LA Auto Show, you had Byton and Rivian. Rivian is starting to make a lot of waves for the fact they're electrifying trucks.
So, Thor trucks.
Thor trucks.
Fantastic company.
And you know, and then what the as kind of you know the windfall of all this too is then you have companies like UPS and FedEx who are now starting to purchase their own electric trucks for their purposes, and that and this is all great because now everything is starting to come together where. A connected future that, you know, arguably one of the things that's needed for a connected future is the electrification of these cars.
Absolutely.
So it's slowly coming together.
And that's all about infrastructure too. And the infrastructure, the grid, 5G networks. We need to redo everything. We need to bring everything up to the next level. People are got to pay for that. So the other big thing in 2018 is the massive. Success of micro mobility companies, the scooters, the e-bikes, the democratization of transportation is infectious. Well, I get drunk off of it just thinking about how the choices you have these days to get around. And I also know there's a company that I've gotten to know a little bit. I've gotten to know one of the founders. He spoke on another panel that I was speaking on. You were bringing up UPS. UPS is now incorporating scooters into their delivery as well. There's a segment that's doing drones. There's a segment that's including scooters. Because think about it, a UPS truck always has to stop in front of a house. Yeah. Even they have to go around a block in a certain area. It's ridiculous. It's a waste of gas. It blocks up the entire block. Why not park the vehicle in one spot and have like a scooter take these packages around?
Totally makes sense.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's so cool. Like, I can't wait to see what 2019 brings.
With regards to the scooter, so along those lines, again, just the micromobility movement is taking off, but not without its
detractors.
Its black eyes.
Sure, of course.
And again, not
like
to,
anything else.
Yeah, and again, not to highlight it, but because I'm certainly for this micromobility movement.
Good.
But the black eye is the fact that you are seeing a lot of these cities. Start to enforce regulations, removing, you know, just immediately kind of wiping them off the city map, Bird and Lime from operating in their city, which, you know, one of the things I like to go back to when I see regulations that come up like that,
yep.
Is the federal government and the Department of Transportation and their autonomous vehicle 3.0. Guide 3.0,
yep.
Where it does start to state how counties, states, the federal government should be operating, and you know the cities that are regulating Bird and Lime are counterintuitive to what this autonomous vehicle guide is actually saying. I mean, they want, you know, it's. The autonomous vehicle guide is saying that before we start to enforce any kind of regulations, we should be operating from a position of seeing what it exactly does first. And all of a sudden, again, when you have cities like San Francisco and other places around, I forget which cities in Culver City, I think is one of them in the LA area, that are just removing them off
Santa
the streets.
Monica.
Santa Monica. You know, it's...
It all comes down to... working with local governments, it all comes down to working with local populations to see how they feel. The problem is, there's a lot of them, but one of the major problems, and trust me, as being a local government guy, like, don't just think of me as like a muni bond guy. I've done local government law my entire legal career. I know how they think. I know how they act. I know all of the issues that they're addressed with. The vast majority of local governments do things through procurement, through an RFP process, which is prohibitively expensive to deal with, which can take an extremely long time. Well, because they're stewards of where we live. They're stewards of our streets. They're stewards of everything. Had we had everything in our life gone through a procurement process, right? If the internet went through a procurement process, who knows where we'd be right now. If Uber and Lyft went through the normal channels that taxi cabs and everything else went through, who knows where we'd be right now. if the scooters and other types of options went through the normal procurement process, I don't know where we'd be. But the reality is there's at least one very strong segment of the population that wants a menu of options transportation-wise. And whether they're skirting the law or they're not skirting the law, they want it. Okay, it tends to be a little bit of folks on the younger side, people that are actually able to ride a scooter, people that are able to ride a bike, people that are able to ride an electric skateboard. They can't necessarily afford a car, and they don't necessarily want to drive around with one. And that's okay. And they like to use public transportation, but public transportation doesn't go to everywhere they want to go to, so they want something else.
Well,
it doesn't cover all of the population. There's a whole other segment of the population, an older population, an aging population, a disabled population, an extremely young population that can't even access that type of mobility. And I feel that is a segment of the population that we need their buy-in for. We need to get them involved. We need to come up with something for them as well.
I would even argue too, Rudy, that segment of the population of baby boomers is really, you know, part of a population that we need to really start to focus on, because even that autonomous vehicle guide does, you know, suggest that there's 25 million disabled people in the United States.
And are you saying all baby boomers are disabled? Because
no.
But
they will be. Yeah, well, yeah. Look, you're 2 years away from probably being disabled. Anyhow,
I'm only 41. Come on.
Okay. But you're totally right. You have a disabled population. You have baby boomers who are, you know, it's funny when my dad is texting me and like, hey, can I schedule an Uber to the airport? Like, you know, he's 73. Like he's using Uber now. Right. And part of his lure to a company like Uber, as well as I'm sure, you know, other baby boomers, is it's techie. So as you do start to have baby boomers use more of this ride sharing services, as they get welcomed and yep. hopefully indoctrinated, as disabled folks start to get welcome and indoctrinated into it, this is a big segment of the population that does need you know, practical solutions to their way of life.
Dare I argue that micromobility is not a new thing? Micromobility has been around for an extremely long time, and I'll give you an example. As I was growing up, I had a grandmother live with us. She didn't speak English very well. She came to the United States. She learned English by watching The Price is Right and The Young and the Restless, which I had to watch for many, many years, and could probably quote many, many things from Bob Barker and The Young and the Restless. And okay, that's a total digression. That's not the point. But my grandmother came to this country. She didn't.
Bob Barker would be all about the brown chicken, brown cow.
Okay, I'm not even. We're done with it. We're done with that. We're done with that. Dial-a-ride. Do you know what dial-a-rides are? They're actually local government, extremely cheap, small vehicles that come and pick you up and take you to places. That micro mobility has been around for forever, right? Why somebody didn't, and they've literally been around since the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. That's like the low-hanging fruit. It's like old Uber. It's like old, like cheap rides. But you brought up a good point. Government subsidies, right? Subsidies. That's the big point of it. Because we want our aging population to get around. We want them to not just stay at home, right? We want them to be able to be a part of our society.
Oh, and they're living longer too. And then
of course.
There's even studies, I think, who was it? Like Wharton did a study or something where it's like, whereas most baby boomers, there was a time where most baby boomers moved to retirement communities. Now they want to live in the city still.
Correct. And that's because of mobility.
Yep. Totally.
It's a 100% of mobility. Everyone's thinking, oh, the return to the cities, that's just the young people. But then soon enough, they're going to want to have kids and move out and never live there again. Not true.
Mm-hmm.
People, I know a lot of people that are retired. And guess what they did? They sold their house in the suburbs and they've moved into cities.
Yeah.
Like we are literally living in the middle of a revolution of the way that we live. Okay. We're barely scratching the surface. We can get to as many higher levels of of a utopian society that we want to get to, just depending upon getting proper input from the community, being willing to pay for things, being willing to understand how infrastructure is financed, to learn how to use Uber, to learn how to use micromobility, to have various options that are available to all segments of the population. I mean, our whole world has been transformed because of transportation, right? The United States is what it is because of the railroad, and then it is what it is because of the car, and it is what it is because of other infrastructure that has been built, and that's true of other places in the world. So okay. we're I don't know what the future is going to look like. It can look absolutely amazing if we're willing to build it.
Okay. Tell me, I'll let you, if you can state two, but I'm going to say, tell me one company that you have either been introduced to or impressed with as a result of 2018.
That's a great question. I mean, to limit it to only two is would be very difficult. There's certainly one company that, I mean, I'm going to be very biased about it because I work with them.
Okay. You probably then have, I mean, that's okay, because then you probably know some of the inner workings about it, which is.
Yeah, I mean, some, you know, okay. I don't know any of the tech. Like I know what it looks like because I've seen the videos and everything, but there is a company that I work with that I serve as their outside counsel, and that's called Next Future Transportation Inc. And okay. They are a company that wants to, they're going after a very interesting problem.
Tell me more.
Buses. Like they believe in buses. They believe in bus rapid transit. They believe in, you know, the importance of using a bus because let's be honest, it's much cheaper to use buses than build brand new transportation systems. They just want to do it in a much more efficient, modular fashion, right? Where you don't just have like one car going the same way. You have the ability of having like car, like a lead car, and a whole bunch of other cars go to different stops all at the same time and come back in, and it's like a modular type
it's
of piece.
It's like I'm thinking of like the tram at Disneyland kind of thing, where it's like you do have it's like a train, right, where you have these modules that can sit whatever 30 people, but now it is all connected. But in this case, using technology, you're saying that like each of those modules can go its own separate way to drop off people and then reconnect so that it forms like this train again.
It's one thing. It's one thing that they're doing. I know that's what they're moving towards. So that's one company. I'm rooting for them. Their name is rising on Crunchbase, and I'm hoping that they will be successful. But one other company that I'm really impressed with and that I'm watching a lot is eVelocity, which is an electric car company. I haven't seen any of their prototypes or anything, but their philosophy and their approach to how they're going to be building out, you know, their prototypes of cars is just completely revolutionary.
Can we look up their website?
Yeah, sure. I don't know if there's a lot of information on there, but I do know one thing that they want to do in the future.
How do you spell it?
eVelocity.com.
We are an electric vehicle company addressing the future needs of urban mobility.
They really want to use a subscription model as a part of their car ownership philosophy.
Okay. For me, one of the companies that stuck out for this year, and they've I guess been around, but certainly the founder, who was a rebellious 20-year-old, he might be right at 30 now, George Hotz from Comma AI. So they're doing something really interesting, and on one hand, they're trying to shame Waymo.
Wow.
And support that of Tesla's model, and specifically of the autonomous driving technology. So what's interesting about what they're doing is that, as opposed to Waymo, where Waymo's they have their autonomous vehicle, but you know they're having to build the car from the ground up with their partnership, right? what Comma AI is doing is that they are using their own device that they can essentially plug in their device into the OBD, the onboard diagnostics of a car, to tap into the computer system, the infotainment, cruise control, the ECU of a car, and use their technology to then have the car essentially navigate on its own. Now, of course, cars are still limited in what they can do because some of these cars don't have the technology yet. But, so what's interesting then about what they're doing is that as opposed to building a car from the ground up using these autonomous technologies, they're taking existing cars that don't have autonomous technology but have a backup camera, have sensors. You plug in their system, their device, which I think they've sold over 1,000 devices now, and logged over 1 million miles, and they're able to turn cars that are in existence into autonomous vehicles.
I mean, that's great. My fear is, and I don't mean to, always focus on fear, is that people could be using the driverless technology for the wrong reason. Drunk drivers. So there was a story the other day about CHP pulling over somebody that used autopilot because he was too drunk to drive. And, that's just one story, right? There's like 40,000 car accidents in the year that you never hear about. But there is that worry about the use of something like that for wrong purposes. And there's still going to be people that are drunk out on the road. Maybe they would drive better with this technology. But I guess it's like, if you have that in the car, and if you're deciding, I really shouldn't drive. Oh, but I have this technology. I'm good. I'll just plug this in. It just kind of, I worry about without the proper infrastructure being in place, the true safety, efficiency, and maximum use of any kind of driverless technology is suspect. That's my opinion. Because if you're going to have a car on the road that's driverless and there's a car on the road driven by a human driver, I think that's extremely dangerous.
It's extremely. And again, that's, if anything, that's the one of the big reasons why you don't have more of autonomous vehicles on the road, is because then you can account all the engineers, even if you combined all the engineers in this world, it's hard to tackle human activity and predictability. So
correct. It's so, I don't know how good AI is going to be. And believe me, I'm a big science fiction nerd, like serious nerd. I don't think it'll ever get there. Okay. You need to have designated driverless car lanes, designated driverless car highways for it to work,
okay,
in my opinion.
Let's talk about what you're looking forward to in 2019.
Many things. I am looking forward to seeing how the federal government comes down on driverless car regulation. Right now there's this, it's a patchwork of regulation. Every state can regulate the levels of autonomy throughout the land and say you can drive a driverless car here, you can't drive a driverless car in this state, can't drive it here, blah blah blah. I'd like to see how the federal government, and they already have bills. They've got bills in Congress that's sitting there, but there's been some pushback from certain cities and states. So I can't wait to see how that shakes out. Not that regulatory stuff is that fascinating. It can be quite boring, but I find something that can affect our society and an entire industry pretty interesting. So that's one thing. I'd like to see how I really am looking forward to seeing how the whole micro-mobility thing plays out, right? You're seeing the scooters. You brought up a good point. Some cities are banning them. Some cities are allowing them. Some cities are having pilot projects. What is 2019 going to bring, right? What's going to happen? Are we going to start seeing designated sidewalks? Are we going to start seeing better protection on our roads for bikers and other people using micromobility products? I hope so. That's a big passion of mine, right? Not that I don't use a micromobility product. And if I did, I'd always wear a helmet. Like I'm in the market to buy one, right? I'm looking at scooters, I'm looking at bikes, but you know, I think I've got great hair. And so I don't.
I was just going to say, I mean, you know, the fact that you're four helmets, do you understand that the current helmets you have right now
would
not be shown?
I am the Sam Malone of 2018. Like, my hair is the most important thing to me. That's a Cheers reference. Probably a lot of people won't get that if you're not from the 1980s. But I hope that now that micromobility is proliferating and is becoming a more important part of our society and our transportation, that we have better bike lanes, better shared roads. That's something that I'm looking forward to in 2019. And what I'm also looking forward to in 2019 are people starting to listen to me and not be bored when I say the words infrastructure finance is something that we need to talk about and we need to think about, because it's finally starting to happen. People, my wife, when I talk to her about my day and talk about what I do, she's not falling asleep anymore.
Well, so there's that hope. If anything, okay? That's where I thought this was all stemming from, was that, like, you were talking with your wife and she's not paying attention. I'm like, well, Rudy, this is just a byproduct of being married, my friend.
No.
But I hear you on that. No, I mean, there's no doubt about it that, you know, if anything, there's definitely not enough tech companies that are devising, you know, products that would be this conduit to helping infrastructure connect to Bird, Lime, cars, things of that nature.
Yeah, there's that, but I actually have ideas, all right, about how to finance it from the private side, about more private input. You know, let these
is that for another episode here to share that, or is that for a business plan?
It's for a business plan. It's for another episode. It's for these tech companies to reach out to me. I've you know, pitched it to one or two. They like the idea. I'm serious about it. We really need to. Yeah, I know. You're serious about it too.
I'm totally serious.
We really got to talk about how to fix our infrastructure. We just have to, and we got to pay for it. That's it. Period.
One of the things I'm looking forward to in 2019, I don't know what the best way to approach this. You know, on one hand, Volvo is interesting to me right now, with some of the things that one of the things they did at Automobility LA is that at their press conference, they didn't have any cars. They basically talked about what they are doing to contribute to the transformation of mobility. And so part of their partnerships that they're forming is having Amazon Alexa tied in better with their vehicle. You also have Amazon coming out with the Echo Auto, where all of a sudden now people can talk to the Echo Auto so that they can get their directions. They can, you know, before they even get home, they can say, hey, turn on the air conditioner at home so it cools down the house.
Right.
So you have the Amazon ecosystem being more integrated into cars. Also with regards to Amazon, so again, this is almost getting away from Volvo now, but, you know, Amazon is forming these partnerships with automakers so that one of their other products, their in-delivery system, which is pretty smart, actually. I'm actually going to be looking into that myself, and that is where, when you do have packages delivered, be it at home, be it at your office, be it wherever it is, as opposed to just having a package delivered at your doorstep, you can now allow people to put that package inside the trunk of your car.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that is incredible.
Yeah. So then now, so again, you have, Volvo's tied in with that partnership. I believe Buick and GM in general, I think is tied in with them too. So that's, again, it's kind of another interesting partnership that's happening between automakers and Silicon Valley.
Of a car, you know, I mean, it's gone from the mafiosos just putting dead bodies in there to being this big tech. I mean, who would have thought, right? What a way. I mean, it's amazing. It's unbelievable. I'm excited.
So, tell me something you may be fearful of in 2019.
A lot more serious injuries and perhaps deaths caused by micromobility. just because, you know, you have people refusing to listen to the companies and their policies. Their policies specifically state, do not ride these on a sidewalk. Okay. Bird, Lime, all of them. Okay. They say it. People not listening. Children dying. An old person dying. And those things getting regulated out. Right. Of course, people drive drunk in cars all the time and kill people all the time. And you're not seeing cars being driven away, but you know, there's a whole other aspect to it. A really bad story, a really bad crash, something really bad happening could hamper a growing industry.
Okay. One of the things I'm fearful of in 2019, so you're having a lot of the automotive world and specifically the retailers kind of and retailers backed by organizations, associations. Specifically NADA and their chairman, Wes Lutz, who's coming out on the offensive now, you know, questioning a lot of these automakers and tech companies forming partnerships and talking about car ownership is dead and how autonomous vehicles are to run the world, and how he's coming up to, you know, defend the dealership world and saying, you know, the one question you should be asking all these people that are talking about this future of automotive and autonomous vehicles and all that stuff is, what do you have invested in this? Follow the money. Where's the money? If you are Bird, if you are Lime, if you're talking about how car ownership is dead, well, what's in it for you? So that's one of the things that's
They could turn around and completely ask that to him and all auto dealers too, right? I mean,
well, but I think that if anything, that's, again, I think this is where he's like protect. He's trying to protect that ground, right? So where this is starting to play out then is when you do have in California an assembly bill that could have been passed, which I am not in favor of.
Explain the assembly bill.
So the assembly bill, it was vetoed by Governor Brown at the time. And the assembly bill was talking about how, in addition to dealerships being reimbursed by the manufacturer for warranty work at retail rates, so essentially you go into a dealership, you're getting work done at a dealership on your car, but your car is covered under warranty. Well, when the manufacturer pays the dealership, they pay the dealership at a lower rate. The dealership is asking for that work to be reimbursed at what you would pay for it. So that was one of the main tenets of this bill, but as kind of one of the provisions of this bill was that dealerships were saying, hey, you know what? In addition to this warranty work, automaker, we do not want you getting involved in this subscription as a service game. So the ability for you to have these perhaps ride sharing, lease sharing.
Yeah, Cadillac had something like that, but they killed it.
They killed it, or in their eyes, they're retooling it.
Right.
So
yeah,
they want to relaunch it. But there's other automakers that have those subscription businesses.
Yes.
And Volvo, actually, you know, this is one of the things that's kind of part of their narrative as well. But yeah, you had dealers that essentially signed off on this bill that wanted people to vote on it, but again, never got past the governor. They wanted people to vote on the fact that, like, look, you know, customers, users, citizens of California, we want to be the source where if there is a subscription service from the automaker, you're getting it from us and you don't get it from the automaker. And one of the reasons why I'm not for that is that, again, you're kind of ruining what technology could be. You know, you're already enforcing regulations on something we don't know what it is yet. So, you know, again, my fear in all of this between NADA and this assembly bill is that I really do fear that there's just going to be, you know, people, companies, businesses, dealerships looking to enforce more of their control over something that we don't know yet what is going on.
You bring up, as you often do, an excellent point, and something that we need to worry about is people protecting turf. Okay, they're just protecting because they're afraid. They want to create. They want to use the law in their favor, right? Some people, you know, use litigation or litigation funding or whatever to get their point across. Other people try to get, you know, laws passed in their favor, and that's not good, because laws are, should be used in the right way. Litigation funding should be used in the right way. But it's out of fear, right? These people are worried about their livelihood. They're worried about their constituents' livelihood. And what we need to do, and I really believe this us versus them, you know, the car dealers, manufacturers versus the micro mobility and all of the ride sharing and all of these driverless cars and everything, this battle needs to stop, okay? We need to work together, okay? There's something in this for everybody, all right? Cars, driverless cars are not going to kill the car, okay? There's a way for auto dealerships to partake in this as well. They should not be trying to do anything to kill new technology or kill, you know, the transformative nature of what's happening. And I really do believe that coming from the transportation angle, the transit angle, the other angle, and you come in from your side, from the automotive side, I don't think there's anybody else out there in the entire country, if not the world, that are trying to come together and have this conversation, to have this kumbaya moment and say, let's work together, let's talk together, let's build this out together properly.
Well, that's what we're doing, buddy.
Yeah, amen, man.
Boom. Fist pump.
Fist pump.
Fist bump and fist pump, both together. And look, certainly, if you put a proposition on the ballot that talks about gas tax, any kind of tax that's supporting some kind of infrastructure that is geared more towards what we are trying to forge, I'll fight with you.
That's what I wanted to hear. That's all what I wanted to hear. That's
well, listeners, happy new year. I hope you have a happy, blessed one. It's been a great 2018. Looking forward to 2019. Of course, Rudy and I will be doing a lot more things, so be sure you do follow us. Oh, Rudy, so why don't you tell people how people share how people can follow you?
Absolutely. The best way to follow me is on Twitter. Salo Rudy, all one word, SALORUDY, no space, no break, all in one. I tweet frequently about my thoughts on transportation, about infrastructure, about local government, about government affairs. Look, there's a lot more to me than just that stuff. Look, I tweet about punk rock, I tweet about film, I tweet about all the cool things that I'm into. Okay, that's the best way for people to follow me, is there, and I swear you will not fall asleep. I promise you.
As we end every episode, cheers, pros, lachaim, kipis, nastravi, salu, kampai, mabruk, tutsint, gambay, yamas, to the customer experience.